you're not any of them. I was born in Edinburgh, Scotland, in 1904, and came out to this country with my parents when I was only a baby. So I don't know anything about Scotland, but when I joined up, I thought I would. But everybody knows we've landed in a different place. We wore the First World War uniforms. Some of them couldn't get, they had a tunic and no trousers. They wore civilian pants, a heck of a looking outfit, on parade. But we got new uniforms after we got the tuxedo and the pats moved out and we moved in. Then we were got new uniforms and we were shipped to Jamaica.
Did you get much training before you went to Jamaica?
Just on the parade square, like left turn, right turn, that sort of thing.
And you're pretty good at marching?
Well, we did a bit of marching, that's right. And we had a machine gun that we took apart and memorized all the parts and put it together again. That was about all. But they loaded us up and we took off for Jamaica. And I always remember we sat off the island for some time. Overnight, you know, they won't let you in the dark. You got to come in the daytime. And when I woke up, it brought me back to the days of old Captain Kidd. There was palm trees all over the place, you know. And we got inside, and they marched. We marched to the barracks, and it was the English had just moved out. We took over, and down there you have to have mosquito bars over you to keep the mosquitoes off, you know, protect you from the mosquitoes that bear the germ for dengue fever, which is a mild form of malaria. And these beds were ancient, about 1890 or something, iron beds, you know, three biscuits, and had this net over you. And the bed bugs, we used to have to take them every morning and shake the bed bugs off them. They were loaded with bed bugs. Well, that's Jamaica, I guess. And we wore those old toque hats that had about 20 yards of ribbon around them, you know. You're supposed to wet the ribbon and it would keep your head cool. And then, well, let's see, we go. It took us out away from there and then we went straight, we came to Winnipeg, back to Winnipeg, and we were here for about 3 or 4 days, I guess. I'm not sure now. We stayed in the Robinson Building. And they give us our own new outfits. And we thought there was something funny. They were issuing shorts. Well, hell, we didn't think we need shorts in the old country. And nobody said anything, but we took off and away went in the train. And we got to Vancouver. There was a boat there, the Awatea, that had run aground. And it just got over from Australia. And it was loaded to the, right up to the decks with sheep. And they turned it, converted it into a troop ship. And there was another ship which used to run up the west coast, the Robert. It was a Canadian boat, and they made it into a troop ship. So it was our escort. And we were on, I was on the Awatea, which was the larger ship. And our escort had to slow down to keep up to us. We were past her knit. Anyway, we got to Honolulu. Pulled in there for refuel. The American fleet was in the harbor. All their battleships and you know what.
Did you get a chance to get off there?
No, they wouldn't let us off. But they had an American naval guard, all dressed in whites and all parading up and down. And boy, was he getting 50 cent pieces, quarters. Hey, but mail this for me, will you? He let us go home, you know. But I don't know how he made out. We took off and we stopped in again at Manila, where we queued up again. And then, I don't know, we were there for a day, I think. We were not allowed ashore. Americans were showing off with their airplanes, buzzing us, you know. And so we went on our way, and when we took off, there was a British cruiser come out. You never saw such a beautiful sight in all your life. All her pennants were out, beautiful. And she was just cutting the waves like a razor, you know, there wasn't a ripple in her. It was a lovely sight. And she escorted us to Hong Kong. And when we, it was, things worked out, it was dark when we landed, seemed. But when we, daylight came, we looked around, and what the heck is this? Here it was all sandpans and junks. It was a Japanese fishing fleet, and they were all around the boat, you see, just looking for handouts or something to throw away that we might throw away. They'd get it, you know. And then we got inside the harbor and landed and marched up to Champchipo Barracks. And got our quarters. That's about all that was there. Then they took us, broke us up, and showed us the island to see. That was Champchipo. Champchipo was on the mainland.
That was on the Kowloon side.
That's right. And then we were positioned over on the island, sort of different positions. We were down near a place called Aberdeen, B Company. And I can still smell it. That's where all the dead fish. And they cook on the sidewalks, you know, and they sleep on the sidewalks. And that's where we were. And McGavin and I, we had a seized Chinese truck, which must have been about 30 feet long, I think. Because we had an awful time getting around those bends, you know. We took it up, we took a mortar platoon up to Wong Shai Gap. And we let them off and we started back, and holy smokes, they started bombing us, so we didn't get very far. We stopped for a while and we didn't know our way back. We got all mixed up, but we eventually made it, but the company had gone in, so he and I got mixed up with the Middlesex. And that's where we were when the war ended.
Were you involved in much of the heavy fighting that went on?
No, I was. Never saw a damn Jap. No, we were sitting there taking all the dirt. Mm-hmm. They were showing mortar shells at us, and they had everything, airplanes and artillery. All we were doing was sitting with a 3-03 rifle. What the devil can you do with that? But if we had seen them, I guess we could have used it. But I didn't see any. The bunch I was with, we didn't see anything. And a fellow named Atkins, he and I were the only two left. There were two killed on one side of me, Kelly and Shaler, and on the right side, left side was Ross McGavin. He got wounded, he got hit in the stomach. And I was the only one in the whole damn battalion that had a camouflaged helmet. All the rest of them had brand new helmets, and we found afterwards from the NIFs that they could spot us like nobody's business. The sun was shining on their helmets. If they had taken them and rubbed them in the mud, took the shininess off, it wasn't so bad. But I had that an oilcloth cover over mine. It was camouflaged. And I guess maybe that's why it saved me. I don't know. Well, then we, it was a case of surrender. I saw the governor of the island going across in a jeep with a white flag on it, and that was the end of it. We all went up to the peak then, what they call the peak. We were going to wealthy people then. And do you want to hear about what happened up there? Well, they were unloading a warehouse. So they had an Indian lieutenant was guarding the door. We look in and took, Lord, they're taking beer out of there. So I said to him, hey, could you look the other way while we take out a case of beer? He just looked at us and smiled, you know, so he walked in and helped us out to a case of beer. We got to put it in the ditch, and I went back and I saw Royal Scott. I said, say, where does a fella get a drink around here? He says, laddie, have you no got nothing to drink? I said, no. Well, he said, here. And he had a Chinese basket, you know, one of those wicked things. He opened it up and was full of Scotch whiskey. He said, here's a bottle for you. So, geez, we had the bottle and there in the cat. And boy, we got feeling good down in the ditch there, you know. And the colonel called everybody up to something or other, so we all fell in and he looked us over, and then that's about all that happened up at One Shine. Then they paraded us down, and then we went to a place called North Point Camp. And we were there for quite a while, and then they took us over to Champchapeau, and that was kind of rough in there. They made bread, they made the bread, I don't know how they made the yeast, but oh my Lord, it was sour. And that's what we lived on. And all we did was lie with the bed bugs.
Did you work on Kaitak Airport at all?
Yeah, we worked on the Kaitak Airport. Now that's about all the work we did do with the airport. And we had that hill where the airport is was a sacred Chinese hill. That's where they buried their ancestors. And that's the hill that they leveled off to make the airport. Because there was a smaller airport, but we were enlarging it. And what's that? But I might say, we ate eggs that were called 100-year-old eggs. Where the hell we kept them for 100 years, I don't know. But they were 100-year-old eggs. We ate a thing, it's a small octopus that looks like a hand.
Squid?
Squid, yeah. We ate those. Awful looking things to. So one kid, he just about passed out with a hand that handed him one. Me, he could take it.
Got a lot of rice, I guess, too.
Pardon?
A lot of rice, wasn't it, as well?
Rice? Oh, no, there wasn't lots of it, no. There wasn't lots of it. Oh, I don't know where my cup is. I've got a cup here someplace that shows you how much. And I guess that's about all that happened in the camp. I don't know who it was, whether it was the Chinese or the Americans came over and hit the oil tanks. We had quite a fire there when they hit the oil tanks. And they came over one day, we were on tanker, which is when they count you, you know. And it's Americans, must have been Americans. They come down out of the clouds. When they come through the clouds, they shut their motors off. And you could see them, but you couldn't hear them. And they come right down low, and they hit the shipyard there. Boy, they blew it all to heck. Some say that they killed 1,000 Chinese in that raid. And then they swung down, and then when they got near the ground, they put their motors on, and away they went again.
Were there any prisoners of war there at the time?
No. We were all in the Shamshapo. I could tell you about the time when the Nips first came over. I'm getting mixed up here. When they first came over, we had two airplanes, obsolete things, you know. And they hit those. They didn't last any length of time. And we didn't even have ammunition. So they figured the Nips' war must have started, so they started counting out the clips to us from the guardhouse. When the bombs started to drop, they said, hey, here. So they hand them out in boxes. They come in boxes. And we had two prisoners that had gone absent, they would leave. And they were in the guard house. And they were hanging on the guard on rails, hollering, hey, for heaven's sake, let's out of here. Let's get out of here. So Mulvaney was their name. So let them out. What happened then? Then the bombs started to drop, and we took for the island. We went across the island, took up our position, and this other part happened. But I think the most interesting part of my experience would be to tell you about our trip from Hong Kong to Japan. We had to run, I think, something like 200 feet. It seemed quite a distance then. To make the trip, we figured that if we got to Japan, we'd be closer to the Red Cross, and maybe we'd get something. But it turned out that it's reversed. So I made it. And I took away my greatcoat. I had saved my greatcoat. And boy, oh boy, it was cold. I was shivered. But they got us on board this boat, and they said there'd be lots to eat on us once we got on board. Lord, there was hardly anything. And you had to get permission to go up on deck. And it was a boat that they had salvaged, because all the ships were scuttled at the end. And they had raised it, and the hold was full of scrap iron. And they put boards on top of the cargo, and that's where you slept. But you weren't to do your duties, you had to ask permission to get up on deck. But we sailed, and we were stopped, waiting for nightfall. And the English aboard said that we were sitting off Shanghai, that the Yangtze River makes the water muddy for about 3 miles out to sea. When darkness came, we sailed again. And we woke up in the daylight, and we were at Formosa, which they call Nationalist China now. It's got about three names, doesn't it? Yeah. It was Formosa then. And there was a whaler there, first time I'd ever seen a whaling boat, had a big hatch in the stern where they haul the whales in. And there was another boat there. So we sat off for a while, and then they let us in the harbor, most beautiful harbor you ever saw. And we just got nicely anchored, and the damn boat started to sink. It could have sunk on the way over, but it didn't sink until we got inside the harbor. So they put us all on a bigger boat, a larger boat. And it's a Japanese troop. That's where they move their troops. They put the cargo down. They don't waste any space. And then they put boards over the cargo, and then they sleep on the boards. So I would get a kick out of it thinking this gun they had that carried a gun on the stern, and it was a field gun with wheels on it, and they blocked the wheels. And that was a gun on the stern. Every ship carried a gun on the stern. Well, then we were there for a day or two, I think, before we took off. And boy, was it lovely. We were laying in the sun. Oh, and it was beautiful. We were lying up there getting a nice tan, you know. And we took off, and I think now that it must have been Tokyo. But we got into this station. It was a huge station. And we got on this darn train. And there, it had no sleeper. You just slept between the seats, you know, best way you could. And I don't remember now how long it took us to get there, but we got to this camp called Oyama. That's where the famous Harvey and Tugby were, you know. The nips would slap your face, but when they did anything, they used their fists, pounding. We'd get so damn weak we couldn't hardly stand up. Anyway, when we got there, we went through snow right up to our knees after laying a few days ago in the sun. We had about a mile or more to walk through that damn snow, and there was no path. We walked through the snow, and we had 4 Japanese blankets, cotton blankets, weren't worth a damn. No heat in those. But somebody got the brilliant idea of making a box bed out of them. You fold them a certain way and you can make a box bed, and you crawl into it and you put the top over your head, and the heat from your breath would warm it, you see. And that worked all right until the fleas and the bed bugs got busy on you, and that was terrible. Well, then, I don't know, for some reason or other, there was a Japanese guard, and his name was Morita-san. We called him Gammy-han because he had lost half his hand in China in the war. And he'd come to me, and he'd say, Juchime, which in Japanese meant 10 men. He wanted 10 men, so I'd go and get 10 Canadians. And we went out to work in the garden. The first thing he did was pass cigarettes around. And we'd sit down, we'd have a smoke, and then we'd get a hole and pretend we're hoeing. Nobody was doing much. It was sort of a break. And when we got through, he'd take us back in, and then he'd give us a great big bowl of rice. So we'd divvy the rice up. But why he came to me, I never could figure it out. So I was telling Nels Galbraith, he's a postman over here, about him. He says, that guy, well, he said, he's the worst guy in the camp. He threw me down those stairs and then out through a window, broke my jaw, said, then he put me in the guardhouse, took all my clothes off, and I don't know how cold it would be, but it was plenty cold. I could guess at 20 above. Took all his clothes off, and he said, he's there with a broken jaw, and he's got to run round, 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 round to keep the blood circulating. So that's the way it treated him. They're funny people, you know. Well, then, we had 3 places to work. He worked at either on a coal pile, or the factory, or in mines. If you worked on a coal pile, it's what they call shikatan. It's a powdered coal. And there was about 6 or 8 cars, I think, on a train. And they're on both sides of this table here. And there were 2 men to a car. And they had an engine. One of our fellows ran the engine. And we had 2 fellas on the first car. We worked a little faster to get our cars loaded up, and then we could sit down. But they'd take their time. and the Nepthys cursing and swearing at them, come on, you know. And one was Mike Haddad, the other fellow's name was, I forget what the other fellow's name was. He says, what the hell does he think we are, empire builders? and then they had another stunt, they put something on the track, so it would throw the engine off the track. And, oh, they had more damn tricks on it. And then we have a treat when you were there. It was called fish head soup. And, you know, it was all right. They said, all right, then. The only trouble was with the... every once in a while, you'd get a fish eye. You'd go out, it's like a piece of stone. Poof, you'd spit that out. But it had lots of wine with it.
I guess anything like that was good for you because just getting rice, any sort of extra was good.
Yeah. And they had what they called sprats that looked like a sardine, little things you eat them, head and tail and all. They're dried in the sun. And we get in the factory, it was nice in there, nice and warm, you know.
What kind of work were you doing in there?
We were unloading the ore. Geez, that heavy stuff, yeah. They at the mine, they took it off the surface mining. It wasn't underground. And it was brown in color, but when it went through these rollers, through these hoppers, it turned black. Whatever the devil did to it, I don't know. But it sure was heavy. At the mine, that was supposed to be a pretty good place to work. Yeah. They give you more extra rations. You know. And they're funny that way. If you can't work, then they cut your rations down. But if you can work, they give you more rations, which is just the opposite we do. We try to build a weak fellow up so he can work, but not them. If you're weak, they don't pay you. They don't feed you. But that's the way it went until the war ended. We were outside what we call a banjo job, just taking the banjo and sprinkling it up and down the rows. And the call us all in as we're going through the gate. The guard says, American, you could say a couple of words. American, Japanese, friends. What the hell's he getting at? We couldn't figure it out. The war had ended. So we got inside, they gave everybody 10 Japanese cigarettes. Gee, what the heck's going on? And then it come out, the war had ended. So the Americans, they took over. They were the healthiest they'd come from. Other camps where they got better scrounging. You should have seen them standing guard. It was funny, of the Japanese label. And then the sight we'll never forget was when the American plane came over, and underneath they had painted POW supplies. And they dropped the stuff by parachute, you see. And the fellows are, I was dishing out chow. And the fellows outside said, hey, look out, they're going, it's coming through the, into the camp. So I thought there was a beam across. I thought, geez, if I get underneath that beam, it would break the fall. One more step and would have landed right on my head. 3 cases of peaches. And it dug a hole that deep in the floor. I'd have been a pancake. And then they saw the damage. It was a rock pile outside the camp, too. Some had landed in there and bust. So they dropped the note by parachute. And it told who they were, where they came from. Most of them from Virginia, in the southern states. They said, don't bother with that broken stuff. We'll be back. Jesus, they were back. And a couple of days. And they got far enough away from the camp that there was no danger. And then we were there for, I'm guessing now, a week or two before we were taken out. Then we went to Yokohama. And from Yokohama, we went to Guam. And I don't think any of us had ever been up in an airplane before. But we had a rough journey on the way to Guam. We hit, I think, every air pocket there is. And we just look at one another, you know, never been up before. Well, are we going to stop or what? You see, the motors are not running and stop. And what's going to do? And then the motors start again, and we're on our way. And we got near Guam. We ran into one of those tropical rainstorms, and it poured. And it really comes down. And we couldn't. The Navy was looking after us, and we couldn't land at the Navy airport. So we circled round. Finally, we landed at the Army airport. Each one's got a different porch, you know. We landed at the Army airport. Each one's got a different porch, you know. We got in there. And we were there for 3 or 4 days. And on the edge of the jungle, I had a sign pointed up. Don't enter here. There are Japanese in the jungle. And it just so happened, they just, not long ago, they got the last of them. He thought the war was still on, remember? Yeah, well, that was the same place. And then when they dressed, well, I guess I should have told you that when we got to Yokohama, they outfitted us with the American uniforms, disinfected us. We all took a shower, and they fed us and all that. And when we got to Guam, they told us, hey, you fellas, don't stand in line to get in the dining hall. You're going up to the head end there. You fellas don't have to stand. But we couldn't see that. We figured the head was bad. We'd fall in as we get there. So I'm standing behind these two Americans. One fellow said, you know, he says, I've put on 10 pounds just watching those guys eat. we'd go back, we'd eat an ice cream by the bowl, a soup bowl. You know, a piece of bread tastes like a piece of cake. Because everything was good. And you could get as much as you wanted, go back and get it. And the Americans, they were fed up with this canned chicken and all the stuff they had, rationed K or something, to get more numbered, you know. And some of the guys couldn't take the plane journey. They got air sick. But they said to me, I want to get home. They said, you can wait here until the boat comes along and it'll take you to Manila. Or you can go by plane. And I'm going by plane. So the plane loaded up and we made a run down the runway and turned around and came back and thought, what the heck's going on? And one of the batteries had gone dead. So they put in another battery and we took off and we went to Honolulu. No, first stop was an island called Kwajalein Island. We stopped there for lunch while the plane fueled up. Then we left there and went for Honolulu, and landed in Honolulu. And we stayed there for a couple of days, I guess. I was too sick and I couldn't go downtown, but most of them went downtown, had to look around and come back with a shirt on with Honolulu on the back of it, you know, and all this stuff. And we took the train from, we went over to Quajalan Island, just off of Alcatraz. And I think it's closed now, isn't it? Alcatraz? Yeah. It wasn't then. And it's a wonder that those poor inmates didn't go crazy. That foghorn just blows 24 hours a day. You know what a foghorn thing. And and we got from there, we went over to San Francisco and then up to Vancouver. One stop in Seattle, Washington. Like I said, it was the journey home.
Did you go to Gordon Head or did you just come straight to Winnipeg?
No, we went up to, I don't know what the name of the barracks was, it's up on the hill. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the name of it was. Yeah. I don't know what the name of that barracks was. It was up on the hill. We were mixed, you know, we had rifles and grenadiers. I lay down and I fell asleep. When I woke up, I looked around, the barracks room was empty. I thought, what the heck? Better go and see what's happening. So I went out to the guard. And I said, how do you get downtown? He says, you get a streetcar over there. I look, about 4 blocks away. That's a long walk. I said, gee, that's a long way. He says, well, why don't you wait? There's a truck coming along, a transport truck. You get him up downtown. So the truck came along and they dropped me off right down in the center of the city. I've forgotten the name of the streets now, but it's the two main streets. So I thought I'd like a bottle of beer. So there was a theater across the street and on this side was a garage. So I said, the garage man said, where does that guy get a drink around here? He said, what do you want, a drink of water? God, no, water. He says, why don't you go to the Army and Navy next door? So I'm in the Army and Navy, and before you could snap your fingers, the whole table was covered with beer. Everybody was sitting over beer, and hell, I couldn't drink any more than a couple of glasses, you know, it was enough. So this one fella, he says, well, let's go and have something to eat. So he takes me over to a restaurant, and we have a sandwich, and they put me on the right streetcar so I could get back to the barracks. And I guess that's about all I get to tell you. We're accepting that we had lots of money. They give us back pay, you know. I had $300 in my watch pocket. Back pay.
Can I go back to North Point and Chapter Cove for a minute?
Sure.
Did you know about the escape?
Oh, yes, sure.
Did you know about it before it happened?
Yeah, we were saving rations for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, rations we were saving for them so they'd have enough, yeah. And after that, we had to post our own guards, which was pretty rough sitting up there all night. You had to wake the next guy up and he'd do his shit. What was the sense of putting us on guard? I don't know. Guard our own name. They wouldn't escape.
They had a habit of punishing everybody for...
Once in the... we had a camp. I mean, Hisco, he's a runner for the Bank of Montreal now. He got the idea we'd keep the hut warm. So there was an empty hut across, and he was lifting up the tatami. That's the mat that goes across the top of the boards, you know. And they were taking the boards out and breaking them up. Gee, they had the hut nice and warm. But he was one responsible, of course, we were getting the benefit of it too. And then it's caught. They cut everybody's rations down to practically nothing for a week. We we damn near starved. We were nearly starving anyway, but they cut us. Everybody in the hut had to suffer. They didn't just pick on the guy that was taking the lumber.
Did you get any of the horrible diseases that went around there, the dysentery?
Oh, God, I'd say. I had dysentery. I dysentery when I landed. Got it on the boat. Because I had to go up and the breeze hit me. I had dysentery. And I had frozen feet there. I lost the end of my toes. We wore, we didn't have boots, you know, we had what they call them, jikatabis. That's a running shoe, and it hooks on the back. It doesn't, it has no laces, it hooks on the back here. And I froze my toes, and I went around for months with the bones sticking out of the end of my feet. And they, Wonder Boy, just to have a pair of, what do you call them? And he picked the flesh off, oh, the black flesh, he picked it off until finally he got down to the live flesh, and then it was already in the dark. We had an English doctor. He cut it off with a pair of, the bones off with a pair of shoemaker's nips. Just snapped them off like that. We had no feeling in our feet there. Our legs were dead.
Was that from Happy Feet?
What
they called Happy Feet, or was that just
from? No, that was from Frost.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that Happy Feet, that was in Japan, Sham Shapo. We call them. What do we call it? Hot Feet, eh? Yeah. Yeah, I was in that place too for about a week.
Medical supplies were pretty well
nailed,
weren't they?
They were nailed, yeah. My brother-in-law was the medical officer of the Royal Rifles, the other battalion, Royal Rifles in Quebec. He, somehow or other, he gave me a, I don't know where he got it, but he gave me a course of nicotine and acid. Never have had enough to, I don't know. The guy that gave me the needle, I couldn't walk for about 10 minutes after he gave me the needle. He didn't know how to give a needle. Just shove it in the air. Oh, and there was no medical supplies. One of the boys got appendicitis. Oh, yeah, I don't know how in the world they ever took or fixed that up, but they fixed them. They had nothing to sharpen anything with. I don't know how the devil they cut them. Get his appendix out. I had to go across and get my brother-in-law in town because I was sitting next to him. So, and the funny part was the nips gave him an egg. Boy, that egg went round and round and round around the camp. I don't know who did eat it. They were trading it for cigarettes.
Yeah. Cigarettes was the currency in the camp.
Oh, yeah.
Were you in any of the trading that went on with the Chinese through the fence, or was that?
No, I wasn't. I didn't have it on the tree. But on the way to Japan, I slept next to a fellow from St. James. His name was Murray. And he was an orderly at the hospital. And the Nips caught him trading with the sentry. Boy, the interpreter stripped him, put his hands up over his head, stripped his back, gave him a cat of nine tails. Wow, wow, wow. And I'm lying next to him on the ship going to Japan. And in his sleep, he's dreaming. He's saying, oh my God, he said, I can't. You got a heart, man? Haven't you got a heart? His back was ripped wide open. Cat of nine tails. Must be terrible. Yeah. But I was fortunate. I didn't get any of that stuff.
You said that Tuggy and who was the other one? Harvey?
Harvey was Sergeant Harvey, he was in charge of the, he was a, an English, an English ordnance, what do you call it, English medical, he was in charge of medical. He had the, he lived like, I bet you didn't eat as good outside.
They had a trial for him after the war.
That's right, out of tuxedo. Then he got his, he got his hooks back when he got over to England. They gave him back to him. But Tugby, he took off. He went to Toronto, I think. He got out of sight. He got it here. He got it on Guam because he beat up one of the Americans. American had a brother in station on Guam. He went into this hut. He said, is there a fellow in here named Tugby? He said, yeah, there he is there. Come here, I want to speak to you. He took him outside and did he give him a beating. You beat up my brother, now I'm going to beat you up. And he gave him the works. The same thing that Tommy happened to him there. With Harvey, when he got to Manila, somebody came up on him too.
Was that fairly common, or were those two officers sort of outstanding and so bad to the men?
Oh, they were outstanding, yeah. There was only one camp that might have been worse than ours. And there was a coal mine. And the guy used to drop a hunk of coal on their foot, break the bone so they could climb off. So we never had to do anything like that. Rations were bomb everywhere.
Did you ever get a chance to steal food from any place where you were?
No. Yeah, not what you'd call food. You'd get a handful of soybeans. You had to do it quick, put it in your pocket. And you always spill a few, give it away. Yeah.
I guess that people got beat up for doing that too, didn't they?
Oh, God, they were caught. They really give it to you. They got an American one time, and I don't know what he had stolen. He took something. So they had a, there was a platform where the nip used to stand, the tank over the couch, you know. And they put him on that, on his knees. He was with a piece of log behind his knees. And they made him hold another piece up in the, over his head. And then they paraded us all out, look at him, see? He stole beads, the interpreter tell us. Stole beans. And the poor bucker, he says, fellas, I don't know. This is terrible. I can't stand much more of this. It wasn't long he fell off the stand. And of course, actually cut himself, bruised and what have you. They took him over and patched him up and brought him back again. And they set up the same setup on the ground. I don't know how long it stayed, but because they broke off. Oh, they worked. Crude. And they, when a guy, I'd been in a hospital, what they call a hospital, same as in the other hut. It's like you had to be sick to be in there. Before the guy's dead, he's dying, they bring in this wooden box and set it alongside the tatami. And all I had to do when he died was roll him in the box. And they cut him away. They don't bury any dead, you know. Even their own, they everything's cremated. Take up too much ground. Right. Yeah.
When you got back, did you have any trouble with the DDA to get your pension?
No.
Did you get pension
away? I got 60% right away. Then I got a stomach ulcer. statistics that up, and I got 20% more, maybe 80, and then on another survey that they had, they raised it to 100. I didn't ask for it. I wasn't in a hospital or anything at the time. But hey?
Did you walk up here?
Okay.
No, as a matter of fact.
Well, all I can say is that we sure can thank the Americans. They sure were good to us. You should have seen us when we landed in Honolulu. You should have seen the supper we had. Plank steak. Great big steak, French fried potatoes, everything you could think about. And they don't hand you a pack of cigarettes, they hand you a carton. Yeah. Everything was. And if you Coca-Cola, boy, that tasted good. You could go and get as many as you could. You wanted, you know. Couldn't have another Coke? Sure you can. You know, they were really good to us. I think that's it.
So worth it? Would that's a silly question, I guess, but would you do it again being if you were younger?
No, I certainly wouldn't. No, sirree. I thought I was going to see the land of my birth. I landed in China, a hell of a place.